Good evening, Madam President. We are ready when you are.
Okay, I'd like to call the Oceana Community Service District Board meeting for Wednesday, September 13th, 2023 to order. First thing on our agenda is the roll call.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Varney?
Here.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Here.
Vice President Gibson?
Here.
And President Villa?
Here. Next on our agenda is a flag salute. Proceed to agenda review. Take a couple of seconds here to review, do the agenda review, and have someone motion to approve the agenda review.
I move that we approve the agenda as presented.
Second. Director Austin?
Yes.
Vice President Gibson?
Yes.
Director Varney?
Aye.
Director Joyce Sennison?
I have a question about the the water thing. Is that's on the agenda review, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be an attachment for item 7D.
Oh, okay. So wait on my question.
For the consent.
Okay.
Yeah, for the consent agenda.
So, yes, aye.
And then President Bia.
Yes. Next on our agenda, we have public comment, and this is public comment for matters not on the agenda. Again, it's for matters not on the agenda. This public comment period provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed on the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited for 3 minutes. I see someone there.
Hey there. Good evening, April Dury. I wanted to address that it seems that after your closed sessions in the past recently, when the performance review of the general manager has been on there, there has yet to be an actual report out of closed session. So I'm... because it's not on this current item, agenda list, to me it appears that maybe this is over, that there has been some decision made about the general manager's performance review. When we go back to November 9th, the last time the general manager's performance review was on the agenda, there was a report out of closed session saying what the outcome was. So I'm just not understanding if... decision has not been made, then I wonder why it's not still on the agenda. And if a decision has been made, why is there yet to be a report out of closed session? If the board votes or if the board gives instruction to staff or legal counsel, that would be the report out of closed session. So I would ask the board members that actually care about following the protocol to maybe get to the bottom and so we can understand that. Thank you.
Any further public comment? For matters not on the agenda. Being none, we'll close public comment and proceed. Next, we have special presentations and reports. And today we have a presentation by San Luis Obispo County Sanitary District staff.
Good evening, Jeremy Gent, District Administrator for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And I'm here this evening at your board's request after Director Austin gave an update reported out to your board and at your first meeting in August. And specifically what it was in regards to is a construction failure that we had on the redundancy project. And I'm also going to talk a little bit about some odor issues because that came up as well. And so with that next slide, Carrie. So So the district's been working to develop a wastewater treatment plant redundancy project. That's the largest project we've done since the mid-80s. And that project came to us in 2005 from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. And the district really picked that up in earnest in 2015 and started pursuing construction of the redundancy project. And so what we're constructing over there is two activated sludge aeration basins, a new secondary clarifier, a new fixed film reactor, effluent and primary effluent pump station, a waste activated sludge thickener, some blowers, yard piping, site improvements, new instrumentation and controls for SCADA, additional electrical systems, and a generator. And then we did flood proofing of all critical plant systems so that the plant would be able to run during a 100-year storm event. And then rehabilitation of our existing secondary clarifier, and I already touched on the generator. Next slide, Carrie. So back at the beginning of July, we identified some damage to our newly constructed secondary clarifier. And so we were in the process of draining that tank. This is a large circular tank that goes about 12 feet into the ground. And so as part of doing startup and putting the new biological process into place, we had to drain the tank of clean water, and we were preparing to introduce wastewater to the tank. And upon draining it, we identified a crack in the floor of the structure that was allowing groundwater to enter the structure. And so we immediately had to call the designer in, stop the contractor, and start investigating what caused the failure and what the repair method would be. Next slide, Carrie. So some of the potential causes, we kind of looked at five different areas and of potential causes, and several of them have been ruled out, and I'll talk about some of these. So one of the potential causes would be an unforeseen site condition. So basically, something was unknown about the treatment plant site. In this case, the high groundwater was communicated and specifically scoped for the design of that tank. And so that site condition was completely communicated during the design. And so there's been no change in site conditions that were unanticipated. Another potential cause would be some sort of natural occurrence or act of God, if you will. And so that'd be like an earthquake or some major flood event or something like that, which we didn't have any of those type of issues during the construction. And then construction defect, when we talk construction defect, we're really looking at the method the contractor uses to do the construction. And so one of the potential causes for a crack to form in a floor like that would be something referred to as a cold joint. And what a cold joint is that you've taken too long between your loads of concrete, and part of the concrete has started to set up, and then your next load that matches up to it is wet, and you've got that dry-wet interface, and that's what's referred to as a cold joint, and that can be the source of a crack. But we investigated, we reviewed multiple photos from the day of construction, all of the concrete truck tickets as they came in, so they were all time-stamped. And so there's no evidence that the contractor dilly-dallied in any way to create some sort of cold joint. So next slide. And so now I'm going to talk about some of the actual potential issues and what we did find as being potential causes for that. So a material failure, and what we're specifically talking about here is the concrete. So I'm going to read some of this text here to just kind of get through it. But so the project team identified a missing additive from the concrete mix that was placed in the floor of the clarifier. This additive is intended to reduce shrinkage of the concrete as it cures. Excessive amount of concrete shrinkage could lead to cracks and failures. Laboratory tests are being conducted to attempt to understand the magnitude to which this may have contributed to the failure, if at all. So while this additive wasn't specifically required in the mix, there was a specification that the concrete had to meet in that it could have minimal shrinkage of the 0.04%. So the approved lab mix that the district received from the contractor included that shrink-reducing agent. However, the concrete that was ultimately placed in the floor of the clarifier did not include that shrink-reducing agent. And why I'm saying if that matters at all is we actually don't know how the concrete performs without the shrink-reducing agent. And so that's the test that is being done right now, but that test takes 35 days to complete, so it's still underway at this point. So it is possible that the shrinkage spec was met without the additive, and so the lab results will give us an indication. And so this issue being a material failure, this would be the contractor's issue. So the contractor would own this failure, and it would be his responsibility to cover costs and remedy this failure if that was determined to be the only or primary cause. So now there is another issue. Next slide, Carrie. So we've also identified a potential design error. And so we're reviewing that with Kennedy Jenks, which was the design firm that was contracted to do the design. And I always want to preface this from a design perspective, is that they have an opportunity to defend their design. And so while we believe we've found a design error, they are more than entitled to show us that we're wrong. And so that's we have a conference call with them on Friday to kind of go through of this week to go through some of the comparison of what we found in the design. So we reached out and hired a third party structural design firm to review Kennedy Jenks' design of this particular tank. And so we have identified some concerns over the thickness. This is a 10-inch thick slab with two layers of rebar in it on the floor, and it we are seeing some evidence that that floor should have been thicker for the design that's out there. And so this would be on the designer's failure. And so, again, at this point, there's no direct cost to the sanitation district, but it is problematic from a legal standpoint because we have separate contributors, and they're not the same party. So we have a potential contractor issue and a potential designer issue. And so that's where our efforts really going to be focused is working and communicating with that group to reach a resolution. And one of the still outstanding issue is we need to understand the failure, and we're just now starting to try to think of, like, figure out what the solutions would be to this failure. So currently the project's delayed. Contractors still on site working, getting ready to do some paving, but they'll quickly be running out of work because we were pretty much done when we identified this failure. Next slide. So we expect to have a full understanding of the design adequacy by mid-September, and that's what I was referring to as this coming Friday's meeting. We expect to have the concrete analysis by the end of the month, and then we're in the process of looking at ways to kind of measure the actual pressure underneath the slab. So the design team's trying to figure that out so we can include that in discussions on the repair. And then we'll continue to update the sanitation district board at every meeting until we've reached resolution. Next slide, Carrie. And so I did want to talk. I watched the meeting, and I think Director Varney had asked some questions about odors at the sanitation district. And I reached out to the Air Pollution Control District and pulled the entire county's history for the past 5 years. And let's go ahead and come to the next slide. And so these were the odor complaints received by wastewater treatment plant. Anyone that's not named had no complaints. There were 24 in Napomo, 14 in Los Osos, 8 in Morro Bay, 3 in Cambria, 1 in Paso Robles, and 1 at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And I will note that the one received by is Air Pollution Control District tagged that as false, not being an actual complaint. And what was determined is that it was a large quantity of new mulch that had been placed outside of the apartment building that the people were smelling, and it was the mulch and not the sanitation district. So I did want to show that, like, regionally we're not a high odor plant. You know, there has been talk in the past of you know, what if they built houses on the airport? And so there's been requests that, you know, the plant would have to move or control odors if they built houses on the airport. which I don't know that that's a real prospect, but usually when you have a rezoning like that, if the land use were to change, you would want to tag the developer and not the ratepayers or some grant funding agency to fund any type of odor control system if they're putting receptors next to the treatment plant, and we would condition that development to pay for any upgrades that they felt they needed to provide adequate living for those residences. And so with that, I'm just saying there's no data-driven need for the district to pursue any type of odor control at this time. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions your board might have.
I walk there often because I'm a walker with my dogs. And there are times where it's stronger. So is it because like every 3 months you do clean out something?
Yeah, so it's really every other week. Every 2 weeks we haul what are called biosolids. And so we use a loader and we scoop up those biosolids and dump them into the bed of a truck. And it's that disturbance that can sometime create some of the odors. Now, if you're walking on the levee on district property immediately adjacent to the plant, you're on district property when you're on the levee. And so that's kind of in our control. And so that's a reasonable area to experience some odors. We're certainly not a no odor plant. I mean, it is wastewater plants do have odor, but as you can see, we're not a problematic generator of odor.
And I would think like if there is ever in the future development there, that there would be a way to lessen that significantly.
Yeah, there would be some pretty high costs. And one of the ways, like those biosolids, those are out in open air drying beds right now. And a typical solution in urbanized areas to do that is basically enclosing those. So you would have a very large, I'll call it a pole barn, or, you know, like a metal building that would span the 1,000 feet of drying beds that we have. So it'd be a large structure, it'd be expensive, but if we were to try to control, and then you would also do a ventilation system with active carbon to eliminate the odors. And so there are things that can be done. It's high cost, and it would be, do we really have a problem that needs solved? So.
Jeremy, as I remember, weren't you for the most part under budget until this happened?
Yeah, so we're still under budget. We have about $3 million remaining. It was a $30 million project. We had about $3.5 million in contingency. We've spent about $500,000 of that contingency, and we're still sitting on $3 million. So we don't anticipate any issues with continuing to deliver the project, even if we had to cover some of the designer's costs while we recoup money. We just don't want the contractor to stop. So we still have adequate funding to complete the project, even if we were to have to fund the repair to the clarifier.
Okay, that's good to know. Thanks.
Yep. Anybody else?
I just want to express appreciation for you coming here tonight and giving us the explanation. I was able to read your staff report to the Sanitation District Board. I thought it was really a very good report. I learned pretty much everything that you presented tonight, and thanks for the update on the odor. I'm sure that nobody is more sorry than you, maybe other than the designer and the concrete people that you're dealing with this issue.
It's definitely a source of frustration because we were close to the end, and but one of the Sanitation District Board members pointed out, you know, we wouldn't want to find this out a year from now, like when we, you know, Michael is our plant superintendent who's here in the audience tonight. I could just imagine him draining that tank a year from now, and there's a big crack in the floor, and there's no contractor, there's no designer, and so this really was the time to find the flaw in the construction and in the design.
Well, glad you can find the silver lining in it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Okay, public comment on this project? Very well done. Thank you. Okay, next we On our agenda, we have staff reports, and we will start with Sheriff South Station, Commander Keith Scott.
He's not here.
But his replacement is.
Hello. My name is John Penaflor. I'm a sergeant with the Sheriff's Office. I work for Keith. So I have some stats for the month of August for you. Calls for service in Oceano, there were 451 calls for service. Included in those calls for service were 4 for assaults or battery, 57 disturbance calls, 5 theft calls, 2 mail theft calls. We want to remind people to please check your mail every day. And if you have to send outgoing mail, we recommend using the post office if you can to secure your mail. We conducted 83 traffic enforcement stops during the month, and we arrested 22 individuals throughout the month of August. So that's all I have for you.
What were the majority of the arrests for?
Domestic violence, drugs, and then warrants that have been issued by the court.
Thank you. Does anyone have any further?
Just a real quick on the motorhomes. Is there an update on that?
So, yes. So, we actually, the couple on Railroad right there, so we have our CAT team is actually working to get them some housing right now. That's actually started, well, it didn't start. It's getting down to the nuts and bolts of it about 2 days ago. So, hopefully, over the next couple days, we should have some housing for them, and those motorhomes should be out of there.
Okay.
That's the plan.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Questions?
Not me. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, folks. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Next, we have Operations Manager, Tony Maraschino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 97.1% full, which is 47,958 acre feet. We had 0 sewer system overflows in August. And we are continuing to take just Lopez water, and we are not pumping currently. We are still conducting samples weekly and monthly. We had 9 work orders, 28 USAs, 8 service calls, 2 after-hours call-outs. One of them was for unlocks due to no payments, and the other one was a yard alarm. So there was a meter vault for the county on Highway 1 that had to get slightly relocated and adjusted to grade prior to the overlay project. We have 2 manholes that really need maintenance. It's on Fountain and Jetty. There's a lot of overgrowth there. We got to go over there and trim it once a year and add base so we don't get stuck before we sewer clean. Preventive maintenance at Well 8 on the pump and injectors, just in case we started pumping. Hydrant maintenance is complete, and all the hydrants are painted. We finished sewer jetting all on Highway 1 prior to the overlay project, because right now we have no access to the manholes and water valves on Highway 1 prior to the overlay. And we're focusing on valve turning currently. We had all 4 of our backflows tested. One of them did fail. It's going to have to get rebuilt. And we are still continuing to replace meters. We replaced Povey's meter with coordination with them and the elementary school in Oceano. And we started meter reading today, and our fog program for the second half of the year is almost complete. We have 2 more locations to do, and our new service vehicle got dropped off in Fresno at Salzy Truck Body. We should get it back between 2 and 3 months. Any questions?
No, not I.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Next, we have OCSD General Manager Will Clemens.
Yes, thank you. So, recently attended the CSDA annual conference in Monterey, and I was invited to give a presentation on the California Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, and that's because I represent all special districts throughout the state of California on that commission that oversees the act. And that deals with bidding of public works projects. So many special districts, after the presentation, expressed gratitude. They didn't even know that their districts could opt into that act and take advantage of the benefits. And many of them expressed a desire to join the act and streamline their public works projects. Also, we had a meeting of the State Water Subcontractors Advisory Committee last Friday, I believe, and the Board of Supervisors finally took action to appoint our general manager and Director Varney as the alternate on that committee. And then at the first meeting, I was made chairman of that committee. So I'm acting as chair of that committee for all state water subcontractors in the county. And as many of you know, but perhaps the public's not quite aware yet, it has hit the papers. Yesterday, the Board of Supervisors gave direction to county staff to work on a plan for service for fire service in Oceano, and their direction was to have the county contract with Five Cities Fire Authority and provide the same level of service as we are currently getting. So now comes the details as they work out that plan for service. So more to come in the future as the county staff works on that plan for service. And that's the end of my report.
Now, so their next step is basically coming up with the dollars and how our assets are used or not used.
Yeah, so the plan for service outlines, there's the state law, there's certain things that have to be in that plan for service. Of course, the level of service that they're going to provide and how they're going to fund that are parts of that plan. So that's what they'll be developing.
Okay. And then as far as using this station?
That will all be worked out in their plan for service.
Okay.
Right now, they're not proposing to use the station to base a crew here, but they still may want the facility in order to be able to do that in the future,
right,
and or to help pay for the costs that will be coming out of their general fund to fund that service.
Okay. But I think the main thing is we will not have any control regarding those issues.
We'll have a how do I want to put it? We'll have a say. You know, we can collaborate with them, but ultimately, when they say this is what we need to fund this level of service, they still don't have to adopt that plan for service if they're not able to.
Make the dollars work.
Make the dollars work. So
okay. Okay.
It will be a. You know, basically, they're going to have to come up with $500,000 a year, is what the current estimate is. Those will be refined, and so we'll see where they go with that.
Okay. And then as far as the station being used or not, that's entirely their call, correct?
If the station, if this property is turned over in the plan for service, then yes, that those decisions will be completely up to them.
Now, do you think that's, when do you have an idea when that might happen? Before next summer, I'm sure.
It has to happen before next July 1st.
But will they take that long?
I don't think so. I would anticipate they're working on it right now, and we'll have something in the next several months.
I hope it's not right before Christmas. And another question, were you out of the room when state water contractors elected you chair?
They had actually made that motion prior to us actually getting on the committee, so that whenever we got on the committee, it was kind of a...
Yeah, usually they try to wait till someone's out of the room or not, not at the meeting. Okay, thank you.
I just want to make sure, I understand that you say the same level of service we're getting, that is, we are being serviced from Arroyo Grande Station and Grover Beach Station.
So those two stations are answering the calls to Oceano.
Correct.
Thank you.
And that is the level of service that we've been experiencing for probably at least a year, I think, at this point. One thing that they discussed was adding a third firefighter onto the to the truck at, I think it's the Rio Grande station, which would increase the quality of service. Remember that this, well, two things. It's true that the county says that they're $500,000 short. They have, they're getting about, they're estimating $1.3 million in property tax to utilize. And they need $1.8 million. I did remind them that there is a, the transient occupancy taxes for Oceano are about $500,000 a year. And they were not counting that income in their calculations, which I think is somewhat unfair. That money goes into the general fund, which is the fund that they're looking to take money out of to make up the difference. You know, it's if we were a, the cities keep all of their transient occupancy taxes. That's why Pismo Beach, which has the same population as Oceano, gets about $6 or $7 million a year in tourist taxes for themselves. Remember that the county sends its plan to LAFCO, and then LAFCO makes the final decision, and LAFCO can deny that. They can, they could deny it, and then basically it's just like, well, good luck Oceano, because as the county pointed out a number of times, they have no responsibility, legal responsibility for fire services here. I'm not sure if they have responsibility for emergency medical services. That's, and I don't know if Mr. Clemens, you know the answer to that. Are they, when they say fire, do they include EMS?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So okay. There is no legal requirement for them to provide that, but as was mentioned by a few, certainly it's their highest priority,
right,
and morally they want to provide some level of service.
Right, right. The scariest part on the LAFCO is that LAFCO could condition their acceptance of the plan with a dictate to us to conduct an election to raise tax monies. That would be an interesting situation. We won't know what happens with that till it goes to LAFCO.
Well, I think the county's answer to you citing the TOT monies is they provide other services for us also. So I'm not counting on that money. That money's not coming from the TOT. It's going to come from us here.
Any further discussion? Next we have the OCSD Legal Counsel.
Thank you, President Villa. I am not Chase Martin, Daniel Chung. I'm an attorney that works with Mr. Martin at his firm. So I do bring regards from Mr. Martin. He had another, another personal commitment that he absolutely had to be at this afternoon. So I'm here to report on a request that Director Gibson requested of us for an analysis of how legal counsel sort of spent our time working for the district. Of course, as we mentioned previously, we are happy to meet with you to go over the bills, and Director Joyce Sunnison had an opportunity to do that, to answer those questions. There's quite a bit of detail in the bills that we sent to the district, but they do contain quite, they are attorney-client privileged information, and so basically what we did to fulfill Director Gibson's request is we broke down the time that we've spent, we've looked back for the past 3 months, and broke down the time into four broad categories. So about 25% of the time that was billed over the last 3 months was conferences with directors. That's procedural assistance for meetings, compliance with the Brown Act, and assistance with the performance evaluation. I would like to assure the directors that appropriate reports have been made after each of the closed sessions for the past, certainly for the past 3 months. Second, the second broad category is conferences with district staff, which was about 20% of our time. That included procedural assistance, legal analysis on present and future litigation, which we've discussed in closed session, work on the Five Cities Fire Agency agreements, collective bargaining, which was also this year, and then a number of public records requests. On the PRA requests, we are not, of course, the ones who go into the files and start digging through the file folders. That's appropriate for staff to do. What we do is advise on the legality and areas where there may be sort of legal questions on information that has to be disclosed or information that can be withheld under the Public Records Act. The third category is development of strategies and reviewing statutes and cases. So that was just about 15%. So those are broad questions that come to us about potential legal exposure, other issues that may come before the district. And about 40% of our time that we've billed for the past 3 months has been attendance at regular and special meetings. So that's been about 40% of our time. And again, just to assure you directors that when Mr. Martin and I are both at meetings, you're only billed for one person's time. So, but that still accounted for about 40% of our bill. I just wanted to conclude with a note that I think the placement of the table is quite apt. You can see that it's sort of pointing in your direction. We serve you. We serve you as the duly elected or appointed members of the Board of Directors for this district. And so when members of the public call, as Mr. Martin noted, I think it was at the last meeting, we do not bill you for that because we don't take direction for the district from members of the public. But one of the things that did come up was a concern that if there are questions that come to you as directors or issues that come to the district by members of the public, we treat all requests from each of you and requests from the district the same way. We don't treat them differently because they came from a member of the public. If you are the one asking the question, we advise you and we provide the information to you or, of course, to the district through your general manager. So just to recap, we spent some time breaking down into these four broad categories, how we've spent time over the past 3 months, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And of course, the offer remains. If you have questions about our bills, we are more than happy to go through those with you. It's not appropriate in a public setting because they do contain attorney-client privileged information. So thank you. President Villa. Open to questions.
Yeah, so it looks like the places we could really save some money are conversations with the directors and then also cut back on special meetings. Bad for our diet.
That's up to the district. We hope that the advice that we provide to you, including sort of the policies and procedures that you need to have in place when special meetings are called, provide value to you. But that's up to you as a board and up to you as a district.
So when we have special meetings and we don't have an AGP, like the video, that's significant savings, right? How much?
I believe so, but I...
AGP costs $785 per meeting with the streaming as well.
But, I mean, I think the point is, though, that we really don't need to have special meetings all the time. We never have until recently.
We've had special meetings that weren't special meetings. Did you, on the public records request, was that all lumped into the one, or did you have that percentage broke down?
So we don't have those broken down. Yep. But again, if you'd like to review the billing records, that information may be there, but sometimes we list it. Yep.
If members of the public call, can they be referred to the general manager?
Yes, Director Gibson. So that is what we would generally, that is what we would do is we wouldn't hang up the phone, but we would direct them to the general manager or to the board.
Any further questions? Discussion here?
Well, so what about our board discussion of trying to cut back on our legal fees? Because aren't they $10,000 this month? Or
in the...
I'd have to look at the demand register. Yeah, I think, directors, well, just one thing, and again, the past few months have brought up quite a number of challenging legal issues for the district, including a number of litigation items. Before that, the five cities fire agreement to negotiating between the cities was not an, mm-hmm. an insignificant amount of time.
But I think the point is we can't keep incurring $10,000 each, you know, at each meeting or each group of meetings. It's just too much money.
I don't think that we've been wasting money, and if the conditions require that we have a special meeting, then we have to have it. And the district is in good financial shape, never good enough to waste money, but we do have a $3.1 million surplus right now. So if we need to spend money on legal issues, then I consider it money well spent.
Well, not all of that money is available for spending. So what do you consider that what would qualify for a special meeting?
Well, we'll have an opportunity to look at that tonight.
Well, one of the reasons we had to have a special meeting recently was because we had a grant opportunity and it had to be, we had a deadline and we needed to get the grant in before the deadline. So that's why we had to call the last special meeting.
Well, maybe that grant possibility should have been presented earlier so that it wasn't the last minute.
It was presented in well enough time. The problem was is we could not get access. Mr. Clibbins was not giving us access to the portal.
You did not receive access because it had not been approved by the board as yet.
Directors,
so that's why you would want to start months ahead of time and not at the last minute.
I understand that there may be a relationship between this and the report by legal counsel, and I understand this is an important issue, but the listed item is a report from legal counsel, and so I would urge you to if there are any additional questions that you have, I'm happy to answer them.
Okay. We'll close discussion and have public comment on these items now.
Thank you, April Dury, and this probably is really indicative of why you have expensive legal bills. One of the things that I remember is when you had asked in the past why a bill on the warrants was so high, you were told this is because you all fight with each other, but we've now learned that you've had some legal issues pertaining to embezzlement within the district that you're looking at. So I would really wonder when someone says, we give the reports that we're required at a closed session, how much is really truthful? I'll leave it at that. Going back to the general manager's report, I appreciate the information on the fire issue over at the county this week. I want to thank him. He did a great job going before the board and speaking on behalf of the district and representing the board's decision. And also, Mr. Varney and Aline, I really would like to thank you. I think you did a phenomenal job at the board in front of them presenting. I had no idea what you were going to say, and it was just amazing. I felt really proud as an Oceano resident that you represented Oceano so well. So thank you for that. The one report that I feel is missing is that September 6th, there was a meeting with RAC, and while President Villa is our representative, she was attending a special meeting and couldn't make it, and thus her alternative, Director Sunnison, was also attending this special meeting and couldn't make it. Our illustrious general manager attended it in lieu of attending our special meeting. And I didn't hear a report on that, so I was hoping maybe you guys could follow up. Thank you.
Any further public comment on these reports? Being none, we'll close public comment on these items. And we'll proceed with the Board of Directors and outside committee reports. And I'll start with myself. And I did attend also, along with our manager, the Board of Supervisors meeting for the fire, Oceano Fire and Medical Services. And I was very, although I really wanted the Oceano Fire Station to be staffed, improved, updated and staffed. I knew that was ideal. So I had to state it, that that's what I wanted and that's what's best for Oceano. Because we would, you know, we would have our fire station updated, improved, and improve, of course, response times. But I'm satisfied that we're going to remain with Five Cities Fire. I'm satisfied with the status quo of how the fire and medical services are here in our area. I personally have called them various times, and I'm very content and satisfied with their services here in Oceano. So maybe in the future it will be updated. I would love that, and I'm be praying for that every day so that that happens. I'm confident that it will. I just want to thank everybody, all the board directors here that could attended, and some community members also that I see here attended, so thank you. And that's it for my report. We'll then continue with Vice President Gibson.
Nothing to report.
Director Austin?
I have nothing. I attended the Sanitation District, but Jeremy gave the report tonight, so I think it's...
Okay. Director Joyce Sennison?
Well, I also attended the conference in Monterey, and it was very well run. I learned a great deal there, and I look forward to putting that knowledge to use.
Next, we have Director Varney.
Mm-hmm. I too attended the State Special Districts Association meeting and appreciate the district and the taxpayers supporting my attendance there. It was very useful. I made a lot of new contacts, gathered a lot of new information, and have new found respect for the resources that that organization can provide to us. And that's all I have to report.
So we'll have public comment on these reports. Anyone want to give public comment on any of these director reports?
I'd like to just make a comment about the Board of Supervisors meeting. I just want to thank our former director here, Karen White, for attending and the great job she did in her public comment. I've got a lot of compliments about what she said. So thank you, Karen.
Can we go back to committee reports, because I'm just curious which meetings all of you attended and which, you know, what they were all about and which ones you thought were the best. At the seminar when you went up north.
The conference, though. Is that what you're talking about, the special district?
Right.
I did not attend it, but the Director Varney, maybe Director Sennison.
And what's the question?
Which meetings did you attend, and which ones, what were they about, and which ones did you think were most helpful?
I attended a breakout session at every interval, covering topics primarily focused on how to be more effective as a director, how to have more effective meetings, detailed analyses and explanations of Brown Act, requirements for community services districts. Workshop on increasing inclusivity and diversity on special districts. Workshop on developing closer relationships with the community through sponsoring and supporting community events and publicizing more effectively what the community services districts do for the citizens that they serve. They were all valuable.
I attended several of the same ones, but the one that I don't believe Mr. Varney attended that I found the most interesting was given by the legal counsel who represents Napomo, and they walked through a scenario and of which somebody was not necessarily following the law correctly, and when and if it's appropriate to contact the DA. And that was the one that I took the most notes on and found the most valuable.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any public comment?
April, real quick, I just wanted to again reiterate the Board of Soups meeting that you both attended, so I'm commenting on your reports. It was a little disheartening, a lot disheartening, especially following what Director Villa had said about wanting to keep the fire station here open, and to hear that it's in such disrepair and run down that they don't want it. And it's really sad because, you know, that was under the purview of previous boards, previous general managers, not just our current one, so don't think that I mean that. All, you know, for 10 years at least, it's been allowed to be run down, and so we're losing an asset because we're not taking care of it, and it's probably not our only asset. So it was sad to hear that, but it was a valiant effort by all of you to try to keep it in Oceano. Thank you.
Any further public comment? Being now, we'll close public comment on these items and continue with the consent agenda. Review the consent agenda and have someone approve it. Motion to approve.
Madam Chair, I'd like to pull item E for discussion.
Okay.
And Director Joyce Sonneson, did you have a question about item D?
Yes,
with respect to GSI Water?
Okay, so I really did spend a lot of time trying to understand this, and it's very technical and I think beyond my comprehension. So that being said, I'm glad this isn't my actual job. But I'm wondering, is the JPA willing, or would they be willing to sign some kind of agreement with Oceano not to take us back to court and not to reduce our intended our groundwater, what we are entitled to, our entitled groundwater. So I don't know if that's at all possible, but that was the thought when I was reading this.
So are you referring to the NCMA, Northern Cities Management Area?
Yes.
Okay. So that's not a JPA, but it's something that's created by the court with their ruling. They developed three different management areas of the groundwater basin. And so each of those management areas, we're part of the Northern Cities Management Area. Then Napomo is the Napomo Mesa Management Area. And then there's a Santa Maria, don't exactly remember the name of that management area, but it manages that section of the basin. And all those management areas are required to prepare an annual report. And so that's what this proposal is for preparing the annual report. So this is a routine annual item that we do. And we split the cost with every other agency that is part of NCMA. So that would include the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, and ourselves. And so we split the cost based on our groundwater allocation, which is 21%. So we pay 21% of this bill. So does that help understand what's going on here?
Yeah, that does clarify it a little bit. Still very technical. Okay, thank you.
Okay. So do we want to?
Okay, with that, I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda A, B, C, and D.
A second.
And then hold A, E for discussion.
I think we should have public comment.
Okay. Public comment for these items?
Thank you. I'd like to discuss item C, which is the cash disbursements. In looking at it, there is a check number 60438 to a company called, I'm sorry if I butcher this, Tomiyasu Smith Horn and Braun. And looking it up on the internet, it appears it's an accounting firm. Although it has been coded to professional services, I'm not really quite clear why it's not coded to accounting, because that is what they do. And using my professional skills, what I do for a living, it looks like they specialize in forensic audits, perhaps. So I'm of the belief that this is who we are paying to deal with the embezzlement that the district has been facing and not talking about. So in reading page 3 of the audit that you all approved in June, where an employee had misappropriation of funds and overstatement of expenditures and then took cash for their from people's utility payments and kept that cash and then voided out the accounts for those people so that they had no balance left. This is not closed session item. This is literally on your own website as an agenda item that you approved in June. So I'm just reading your own document. I don't understand, again, why this would be one under professional services when it is a forensic audit for an accounting firm. So that would be accounting. And I also don't understand, according to my recollection, as best I can in my old age, is I never saw it hit the budget where we had a forensic audit there. And or even a budget adjustment when we decided that we needed to investigate the employee who's been embezzling from the district. So as my directors who spend my money, that's a question I ask of you and spend all of our money is, where has this been budgeted? When will it get coded to the really the correct account? And then my last question on it is, last meeting you guys minimized the amount that our general manager is allowed to spend. This is before that. There was never a report at a closed session saying that the board directed staff in any way on any litigation stuff pertaining to this case based on the November 9th code of the agenda. So I'm asking, did the board direct the general manager to hire this firm? Did the board direct legal counsel to hire this firm? Did the board vote on anything? There's never been a report. So it really is questionable, and it makes me very nervous to realize that today you're just about to approve the amount that it will take to $10,000+ for this firm. When does it end?
Any further public comment? Being done, we'll close public comment. Would you like to respond to any of that?
No. I think we have a motion and a second. So,
do we need to put a line item on the budget then?
is...
No, we have a line item budget for professional services, which this is professional services, and it's budgeted.
Okay.
So accounting goes under it? Professional services is a... Yeah, I understand that.
Okay.
But whenever there's professional services, it could be accounting, it could be...
It can, it's,
it could be
we, when we hire a professional services firm, which accounting is professional services, it could be engineers, those all fall under professional services.
Well, I don't know, maybe just to make it clear, like when it's accounting, put accounting, professional accounting services.
So directors, if I can draw your attention to the demand register, you'll see that professional services is used quite broadly. And so, your staff has coded these items correctly.
Okay. So if someone wants to know exactly what professional services, that will be answered in a meeting.
If directors would like to know what any of these items refer to, we are happy to answer questions either in open session if that's appropriate, or in closed session if that needs to be the case.
And also the public, they can call and ask. Because this is an agenda.
So to the extent that the public reserves all their rights under the Brown Act and the Public Records Act, and if requests are submitted, the district will comply as required by the law.
Thank you.
Are you ready for a roll call? Okay. Director Varney?
Yes.
President Villa?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sinison?
Yes.
And Vice President Gibson?
Yes.
Okay, so now for the pulled item, the consideration, it's recommendation to cancel the regular meeting of November 25th and December 27th.
I asked for this item to be pulled because I don't think that we can afford to lose two meetings. We have quite a bit of housekeeping to do. There's still a number of items, new ones coming up. And so what I want to suggest is that we simply move the date of our second November and our second December meeting to the Wednesday immediately following the regular scheduled meetings of the second week, so that in November and December we would be meeting on the second and the third Wednesday. And if in the case of there is really absolutely no significant business for us to conduct, that meeting can be canceled.
I didn't understand that. Can you repeat it?
What didn't you understand?
The dates.
It would be, we would meet on the second and third Wednesdays rather than the second and fourth Wednesdays. I think that, I understand people being reluctant to have a meeting on New Year's Eve. Thanksgiving Eve, and then, that close to right after Christmas. I think that there are a lot of things for us to be working with.
There's not a government agency in anywhere that meets the Wednesday,
right,
before Thanksgiving and the Christmas weekend. Everybody shuts down. This is just I don't know why you're
all that's why proposing that we move the meetings.
Then the meetings are, I don't know if we can even do that because the sanitation meets on, it's a schedule that's set up from what I know.
So I don't believe you can move the dates of your regular meetings. That's set in your bylaws. What we could do is cancel the regular meeting as this proposal set out in the staff report is doing, But then if you need to schedule a special meeting on the second Wednesday of those months, you can do that if it's needed.
Well, I need to look at my calendar at home, but we've got plans around both holidays. And my kids,
That's why we did this, is typically staff schedules vacations for the holidays. And so this will give them, normally we cancel these meetings, but this year there's been some complaints when meetings are canceled. So I wanted to
These are the standard ones that everybody cancels.
I wanted to get this on the agenda early so that staff can plan their vacations. Now, I don't celebrate the holidays, so it doesn't matter to me, but other staff
does
schedule.
This is not.
Mm-hmm. And I really don't think if some of the, for instance, myself is planning to be gone, that you plan a meeting when you know members are not available.
Well, not knowing your travel schedule, there was nothing personal involved here.
Now that people know.
In the history of this district, these two Wednesdays have been canceled every year. And it's just the standard, like the county, everybody does it. Nobody meets on the Wednesday before. And then just try to schedule. You don't know, there really isn't much going on at that time anyway. Everybody's in holiday mode.
I would just propose that if needed, we can schedule a special meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we also need to consider the public, that how many people in the public are not.
To the meeting around Thanksgiving or Christmas. It just doesn't happen.
So I think what he's saying, he wants to move it up on the 3rd, not the 4th.
And then I have a conflict with the sanitation district.
Okay. So, yeah.
Well,
so,
then you'll have to make a choice.
If it can't be done, then we need to have something that there's a deadline, then we'll just schedule a special meeting.
Well, we'll be electing new officers in November.
The first meeting in December.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we move the November and December second meeting dates. I'll have to take that back, since the bylaws say that we meet then, but we never meet then. What's the problem with that?
So the what the bylaws say, and Director Varney, I understand that, but the regular meetings of a board are set annually, either through the bylaws or through some action of the board, and that's set one time a year. The bylaws do say so. The board does not have to, as a matter of law, cancel these meetings. But the bylaws do say that regular meetings of the board shall commence on the second and fourth Wednesday of each calendar month. That's what it says. So what the board would have to do if you'd like to sort of, in effect, reschedule those meetings, is to cancel these meetings, and then, I was going to get to this later, but the board, by a majority vote, can convene itself into special meeting at any time. So you can decide to do that now, or you can decide to do it.
Well, we can do that at any time. So really, shouldn't it say here that we are, how do we operate in violation of the bylaws? I guess we can just, I'm glad that it's coming here for our discussion. So we have to, we're taking a vote to violate the bylaws. Come on. I mean, if they're there, you just read them to us.
I did. Yes, yes,
Daniel.
Yes. What I'm trying to do, Director Varney, is so you don't have to violate the bylaws, because you can cancel and then reconvene a special meeting. What I'm trying to think through is your concern is how do we, in some sense, when the board adopts the meeting schedule for next year, how do you not do this again? And that would have to be done. So regular meeting times are set annually pursuant to the current director's schedules and preference with the public's right to participate.
Well, we can cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yes, but again, the regular meetings have been set by the board once annually. And so what you'd have to do is cancel the meetings and then call a special meeting.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to be making any motion.
I'll make a motion that we cancel the regular meeting on November 25th and December 27th as customary for the holidays.
I'll second.
Public comment.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Vice President Gibson?
Yes.
Director Varney?
No.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
President Villa?
Yes. Okay, so that brings us to our business items.
Quick comment.
Sure.
So just so Director Varney, should you decide to change this in the future, the bylaws would essentially have to be amended. Again, it's been set at the beginning of the year under these bylaws, but if you'd like for the meetings to be, so it would be regular meetings are the second and fourth Wednesday of each calendar month, except for the months of November and December, when they shall be held. And that would be the, for next year, that would be the change that you may propose if you'd like to have the regular meetings, have two regular meetings held in those months that don't conflict with the certain other days.
Mm-hmm. But let's keep it real. A lot of people, including a lot of directors, are preparing for the holidays and holiday shopping and cooking. So,
and the public, and so is the public and every other person.
Okay, so now this brings us to business items, and it's discussion and consideration of the Parks and Recreation Committee of the Oceana Community Service District, duties, governing policy and procedures, and committee membership, and proposal resolution and bylaws concerning the same. Would you like to, someone like to start discussion?
Sure. I welcome this document and appreciate the work that's been put into it. There's a lot of information here, and I've had a chance to go over it in terms of, and overall, I think that, about a good 80% of this is, well, maybe 70% is pretty good as it stands. There are, I do have questions and I do have suggestions for change, and I have needs for certain clarifications. And then there are some significant things missing here that I would like to add for consideration. I look at this as a first reading of this document. I would certainly not be prepared to vote on this tonight. I'm first and foremost because I think that out of courtesy to the Parks and Recreation Committee, they need to see this and review it, and we need to have discussion, and that will be at the first Tuesday in October. So I'll be able to bring that information, their feedback, to our first meeting in October. There is quite a bit of focus on the constraints on the committee, which I think everybody on the committee and everybody on this board understand that the Parks and Recreation does not have authority to commit to make decisions on behalf of the board or to take direction or give direction, act independently. However, there are some areas in here where I think that things go a little too far, or we need to reconsider just some of the phraseology. And I am prepared to go through and discuss each of those points if you'd like me to proceed.
May I ask a question? So if it's your intention to take this to the Parks and Recreation Committee in October, would it be beneficial just to wait until they have a chance to see it and then bring all the changes back? Or I just don't know if we do a bunch of work tonight and then they see it and they want to change it. I just didn't want us to spin our wheels.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a good suggestion. We can do that. That's not a problem. Let me. Let me make a couple more comments. Pardon me. I think that in the bylaws. Most of them are helpful, but they're a little heavy-handed on the whole. This, what is the direction of the board, that the board is doing all this directing and the committee can't do any directing. The committee can't enter into or initiate any agreements without the board knowing about it. So when you're sitting in a Parks and Recreation Committee meeting, as was our last one, somebody came up with the idea of what if we did a Day of the Dead community celebration at the community center? And somebody else, the Boys and Girls Club, waded in and went, that would be great. We have a lot of parents who want to participate in that. Somebody from the Safe Routes to Schools Committee came in that her daughter dances in a folklorical group and that those kids would like to dance at that. And then somebody came up with that, well, let's have a community potluck and families can bring things for the oferta, for their shrines. And we'll have a Day of the Dead shrine there. So the way some of this reads, it's like we seem to be precluded from having any kind of discussion like that because we don't have direction and permission from the board. Now, I don't think that that's what the intention of this is, but those are some of the nitty-gritty things that need to be clarified, because if they're left like that, there are people who will start invoking them. And I just don't want to be dealing with those kinds of issues.
Can I make a comment?
Please.
I think that's a great, that's really the job of the committee, is to hear those ideas from the community and then advocate to this board for whatever that committee wants to advocate for, and I'll make it analogous to at the Board of Supervisors, because it's what I'm familiar with. Each supervisor is given a certain amount of budget for community project funds that they can spend in their district. And so then the community members in their district will come to them and say, can we have $5,000 to assist this nonprofit put on a Day of the Dead celebration? And the supervisor says, yeah, I think that's great. But then the process for paying them is to bring it back to the Board of Supervisors on the consent agenda, and they dole out their community project funds throughout the year like that. But the Board of Supervisors has to approve it in total. So I kind of see that the Parks and Recreation Committee has been given a budget of, $19,500, and then makes recommendations on who to give that money to, but it has to come back to the board for ultimate approval. So
I think that could be something that works. I also thought that since it's the proposal here is that we be a standing committee, and if a standing committee then has a line item budget, and let's say next year with our budget we allocate $20,000 to community events and $40,000 to grant writing. Well, I'm joking. But if we allocate, we say we're going to put $4,000 to sponsor community events, and that is approved as part of the budget, can't we then just act on that without coming back to the board? I mean, that's what we do at every meeting, really.
So there are two questions. I think the first, Director Varney, and I understand that the district doesn't have other sort of, I'll call it a standing committee, and I'll explain that in a second, but sort of committees that operate like this. And so I think part of this, frankly, is just going to be a learn and grow type of opportunity for the district to, and the board to figure out what that relationship is going to be like. As I understand it, under the current bylaws, so your example is a great one because it's one that I think many directors and community members would support, and highlights the convening power of this Parks and Recreation Committee, which is that you have folks who represent the community and are excited about creating park and recreation opportunities. I think the question is whether that discussion commits the district to any policy act or expenditure. So as the current bylaws stand, if it's just convening and talking about having this event, but it doesn't actually commit the district itself to any policy act or expenditure, then someone can't come out and say, wait a second, this didn't come before the board, because there's the natural convening power, the convening sort of influence and power of the committee. And that's as the bylaws currently stand again. So the operative question, I think, is does the action commit the district to any policy, act, or expenditure? And under the bylaws as they stand now, those decisions would have to be presented to the full board for adoption by them. But if there's a great community event and the people happen to be there in the meeting, the right people to pull things together, it would not be inappropriate either under the bylaws or under the proposed, under the board's bylaws or under these proposed bylaws for the committee to act as a convening sort of place. So I'll pause there because I think that's part of your question is, well, there are lots of opportunities. The people are at the table. If there are events that people want to plan, why should these bylaws be restrictive in that way? And I think that that's, again, it's up to the board, but I don't think that these bylaws would prohibit a discussion of a community event that people are planning, so long as it doesn't commit the district to any policy act or expenditure. So, pause there.
And it seems like if we're spending money, that legal counsel would probably want to look at it too.
I think that's certainly true, but I suspect this also happens at the county level. Those questions can come to us by email. Again, should the board decide to delegate those responsibilities to the committee itself, which again is not currently the case under the district's bylaws, that would the directors or staff or whoever would forward those to district to legal counsel. Mm-hmm. So that again, if that's what the board would like to do, you're free to do that.
Excuse me, can we take a brief break? President Villa's mother is in the hospital and her phone keeps going off.
Yes. We,
so yeah, can I'm we take a real quick break?
I don't turn it off completely because of the text.
So if you'd like to call for a brief recess, that would be appropriate. Yes.
Sure.
Sorry about that.
No. Oh,
Well, you might. Do you want to start?
Oh no, go ahead.
Okay. Hi. Okay, we're back. We reconvened, and so we're still discussing the OPAR duties, governing policies, procedure, committee membership, et cetera.
And Vice President Gibson, I just note that President Villa has stepped out for a personal matter.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so I believe, Daniel, you were speaking.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, directors. So I understand that there's been some, understandable confusion about the sort of difference between what a standing committee is and what an ad hoc committee is. And so this is where I think that this sort of draft resolution tries to address that, but essentially it's a semantic difference, but functionally under the Brown Act, we do believe that the Parks and Recreation Committee would have to operate as a standing committee that's subject to the Brown Act. So let me just very briefly walk through again where I think the understandable confusion might be coming from. So what your bylaws say is that
excuse me.
Yes.
When you say are you talking about the OCSD bylaws or these bylaws?
Yes, I apologize. Thank you, Director Varney. It's the district's bylaws.
Okay, all right.
So the district's bylaws say that all... I apologize. Committees shall be advisory committees to the board, and that's in section 3.1. Mm-hmm. So what that, I believe, is describing is the sort of role and function of the committees that this board might create. So here's where it gets tricky. So the Brown Act, so this isn't the definition of a legislative body. So this is, I drafted statutes before this job, and so this is the exception to the exception to the exception, and that's why it is what it is. So the Brown Act says that a legislative body includes a commission, committee, board, or other body of a local agency, whether permanent or temporary, decision-making or advisory created by charter, ordinance, resolution, or formal action of a legislative body. So now we're in. We're going to step out for a second because it's followed by, however, advisory committees composed solely of the members of the legislative body that are less than a quorum of the legislative body are not legislative bodies. So in some sense, we can argue we're back out. But then it says, except that standing committees of a legislative body, irrespective of their composition, which have a continuing subject matter jurisdiction or a meeting schedule fixed by charter, ordinance, resolution, or formal action of a legislative body, are legislative bodies for purposes of this chapter. So if done a bit of a tango, sort of we're in, then we're out, but I think ultimately the intent of the Parks and Recreation Committee seems to be to give it a continued standing existence on issues that it can discuss and recommend to the board. And so both from a legal standpoint, but also we would just advise, even if it may not fit, even if your belief is that it may not fit, that the committee does operate as a standing committee under the Brown Act. Mm-hmm. So I hope that makes sense. And then the bylaws do also specify that all committee meetings shall be conducted as public meetings in accordance with the Brown Act. But I did just want to present that to you briefly because, again, the bylaws call them advisory committees. The Brown Act says that certain advisory committees are carved out. But because of that in out in that last portion that says, notwithstanding all of that, these committees shall be subject to the Brown Act. We do recommend that the Oak Park Committee operate under the requirements of the Brown Act.
Well, so I appreciate that. And, it was from the very beginning in proposing Parks and Recreation, it was always known to be whatever it was going to be, a committee of the district, and did not have authority to, do anything out of line. I'd like to go to, this is page 33 of the big agenda. It's the section of duties of the committee. And just for purposes of kind of demonstrating discussion on this, if we look at 3B, this is about And this is under the category, number three is the kinds of the kinds of activities that the board can engage in. And B has to do with researching grants related to the district's parks and recreation power and at the direction of the board preparing applications for grants and other funding sources. So I don't think this means that the board is going to direct me to write a grant. Although, I mean, the wording could be interpreted that way. And again, I mean, we had an issue with this. The reason, as Director Sunderson pointed out, that we're late in getting this grant together is that, you know, we did not get the codes to go into the district's account at the grantor's website. And so that was delayed. And that's why we had to have the special meeting. So this is something that needs to be an example of what needs to be cleaned up. And there's a number of them in here. Another one on the next page, section two, number four, and this is important in terms of talking about the relationship between the committee and how we can't, you know, we can't commit the district to any policy or expenditure, all understood. Down to the bottom line that, or directing action by district employees except as provided in this section, or taking steps to arrange an event or activity. So again, this is, I couldn't find any place in here where it provides what we can do or not do in terms of directing employees. So I'm not sure what that's referring to. And again, that we can't take steps to arrange an event or an activity. So these are things that have to be clarified, the wording.
Well, I mean, I think you could confer with the general manager.
I kind of read that language that it's saying this committee, the board is the one that sets priorities of staff. So this committee can't usurp the board as a whole, their priorities in what district staff works on. I think that's what this is trying to say.
Right, okay. So we'll need to work on that. There is the fact that the board has approved, and really without any discussion, that the OPARC budget had over $4,000 taken out of it as, you know, something that could be, that was earmarked for administrative purposes, 25% of the budget almost. Now I assume that.
And we've probably spent more than that on the administrative, you know, things regarding parks and recreation so far. But what that means,
you said we've spent more than that on parks and recreation so far.
Oh, I'm sure this year, all the, with the special meetings and the cost of legal coming to just talk about parks, I'm sure that. But that's all that it's going to get. That's just an allocation. So that's what funds our administrative staff's work from all of our budgets is this allocation. And so, like, when you go to apply for this grant and we submit the budget, we don't have an administrative charge that we need to add to it. It's just whatever that program's going to cost, because our administration has already been taken care of in the budget.
So do we need to add on a percentage into the grant for administration?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, that's, I just So there's a couple of examples, and that's what we'll have to work out. And then there's some, I think, other things to... let me just preview this, that one of the things that we're doing in this grant is embedding into it some environmental education. I won't call it environmental education. Education around water conservation, water protection, and waste reduction, recycling, repurposing. And not only is it education, but it's also going to be implemented on all the field trips where there is recycling, where kids use refillable bottles for water rather than single use. And not only is that a good thing to do in education, but I'm also going to propose that that will allow us to tap into the water fund and the waste management fund for some help in financing of parks and recreation. Right now, we do that to the tune of $10,000 for one Cool Earth program. That's where the funding comes from. And that was the nexus and the explanation given to justify it. So I'd like, I will be proposing that we use that same rationale to support parks and recreation budget. And that would be something we would do in any program that we sponsor. I mean, the Day of the Dead or whatever. So those are all my comments on this tonight. And I will take Mr. Clement's suggestion to take it to the committee and come back with a more complete overview.
I had some questions about OPAR. So in looking at the budget, how do you propose to sustain, the monies that you have? Because 20,000 minus whatever is not going to go too far. So how do you hope to do that?
I haven't thought that far ahead at this point.
Well, don't you think that should be one of your major concerns?
Nope, not at this point. Right now I'm working 10 hours a day writing a grant to get money for Oceano Elementary School kids to go on field trips.
Okay, and what about what types of programs or sports are you planning for the committee to focus on? Like what age groups?
I haven't made any decisions about that yet.
Okay. And I would hope that you're going to include that we don't duplicate or compete with, existing programs.
The intent from the very beginning has been to support and supplement if appropriate.
Well, yeah. But I think competing or duplicating isn't what OPAR should be about.
Do you have any evidence that we're competing with anybody?
No, but okay. Some of your earlier suggestions were soccer clinics and that kind of thing. So I'm just basing that on your prior information.
I think what you see is I think what we're working on right now is a perfect example, although this is volunteer labor writing the grant, but there is a lot of energy in the community around doing things like this. I just had a contact from Habitat for Humanity that's interested in coming together and starting to talk about a walking and jogging track around the perimeter of Oceano, sports field. I don't know what that's going to evolve into. I hope that we have the capacity to just meet with folks and talk a bit about that to get it fleshed out, before I have to come here to, get permission. to talk further. But this is not about this is not about at least what one member of the audience suggested a few weeks ago, that this money was gotten to funnel to Jimmy Paulding to take to Grover Beach for them to use to get Grover Beach to take over Oceano and get our water resources. I mean, you know, it's there's this is here, all this is about is being in service to the community.
Well, I think at some point the public and the board needs to see the nuts and bolts of it. So that would be my comment.
Well, when there's nuts and bolts, you'll see them.
Any other board discussion? Okay, public comment.
Good evening. Thanks for this robust conversation. It's very enlightening, and I really appreciate GM Clemens' idea of go elsewhere, flesh it out, and bring it back. I think that's really helpful. On page 34, I guess, of it, there's the section 3, which is the committee membership. And I would ask that that get fleshed out just a little bit more as well. I can obviously understand A, I understand B to a degree. When it says individual representing, it's not clear. Does this mean an employee of Lucy Amar Unified School District or my kid goes to Lucy Amar Unified School District? I would like that to be fleshed out. But to say that. And then does it need to be an administrative, you know, position, or is it the PE teacher, the janitor, the, you know, lunch lady? Who is it? And then C, the same thing. You know, it says an individual representing the PTA, but does that just mean my kids in the PTA, or does it mean the, you know, treasurer of the PTA? Could we flesh that out a little more? And then D, clearly that I think that would it's pointing to VACO, which is the advisory council we have currently for Oceano. The key word that I see there is residents of Oceano. So I would ask that any VACO representative be an actual a resident of Oceano and not just maybe a business owner or commercial property owner. And then E, lastly, when it says for residents of the district, if we could be more clear on that, are we talking people who have just a vacation rental here and they're here, you know, the summer months, or they rent it out but they own the property? You know, people who take the $7,000 exemption on their property taxes, to me, those are actual residents of the area. So if we could be very concise on that, I think it would be helpful. And then number 2, where it says the applications for membership, could we see the application? Could we get that as part of this whole thing to understand and approve? That was my final request. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Oh, you're not going to talk?
No.
Oh, you filled out a form. Okay. All right, then we'll go on to received written communications. Do we have any?
Yes, we had one correspondence that was attached to your packet.
Okay, any discussion on that? Okay. Late received written communications. Okay, none of that. Okay, future agenda items.
Yes.
Okay.
So I would like to, we're going to need a special meeting on Thursday, September 21st, for the board to review and make a recommendation on submission of the grant for the field trip transportation for Oceano Elementary School. The grant is due at 5 p.m. on September 22nd, and it is not completed at this point, And I did talk with our legal counsel, and I think the conclusion was that it would, I'm still not totally clear, but if, and that the bottom line was that we needed to have a special meeting. And I think maybe in the future, I mean, I don't know about the, if the board empowers the committee to write the grant and agrees with the grant, then I don't know why the board needs to come together again. And if we do, we do. But in this case, we do. So we need to have a special meeting for September 21st. I think that's maybe, is that the first order of business here? Before we talk about what, there are some other items that, since we're having a meeting, that I want to propose for it.
Yes, thank you, Director Varney. So just to elaborate on what you described and the conversation that we had. So this board authorized or directed staff to provide the information that was necessary to complete the grant application. That motion did not include the authority for any individual or for the committee to submit the application. We did talk about whether it might be able to go onto this agenda, but because of the Brown Act and it wasn't placed on the agenda, it wasn't able to be on this agenda. And I understand that the grant application, of course, is still in process because you've only had about 7 days to work on it. And so, again, the Brown Act does allow either the presiding officer of the board or a majority of the board to call itself into a special meeting. The recommendation was that the previous meetings so far have been called by the president just because of the circumstances, but Director Varney, you expressed a desire to be transparent and to provide the public with notice of this special meeting, and so the recommendation was if the board would like to approve that grant application to just by a majority vote of the board to call the special meeting at this time.
Okay. So I would like to make that motion that we call a special meeting of the OCSD on September 21st at 3 p.m.
I second that.
And that's the advice of legal counsel.
So just to be very clear about what the advice is, it's that so the board should decide whether it would like to call the special meeting or not. That's completely up to you. But my understanding, and I think it's okay for me to represent what President Villa has said, is that she would call this meeting under her authority as the president on the 21st. But because of the desire to provide the public with advance notice, and to make this a decision of the board, for the board, if it's going to call the special meeting, to do it by a majority vote of the board in this meeting today. So again, just to recap, the decision to call the meeting is up to you, but if you are going to call the meeting, a majority of the board may act to do that.
And what day of the week is the 21st?
Thursday.
Okay, I don't have a calendar. Okay, so there's a motion and a second. Public comment?
You may open it up for public comment. This is a scheduling matter, but you may open it up for public comment.
Okay, public comment. Okay, seeing none.
All right, Director Varney?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
And Vice President Gibson?
Yes.
Okay. Then I have another agenda item for the September 21st meeting in open session. And this is a clarification and possible action on bylaw 2.4.C. This is a bylaw that we have already modified once. And this has to do with the authority of, in this case, the president to put something on the agenda. And so want to revisit that.
You mean put it on the agenda just at will?
Yes.
But, I mean, one of the big reasons it should be done at a
we're
meeting...
We're not going to have a discussion of this now.
Sorry, this Vice is, President this. Gibson. So I think the question is, the meeting has been called, and so if there's a second on placing on the agenda for the meeting that's been scheduled for September 21st to open and reconsider bylaw section 2.4, I'd suggest section 2.4 with the intention of discussing subsection C, just mm-hmm. in case other amendments are needed to that section, corresponding mm-hmm. changes. So this just requires a
move and a second. We have it.
Yes.
And who seconded?
I second it.
Got that, Carrie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I have a future agenda item. One is that in light of Pismo City Council and Eleeker and then the DA's involved and everything, I think we should review the Brown Act. And I don't understand why... a council person would do that. I mean, they take an oath not just to the city. I mean, they take that oath for the community, and it really shows a lack of morals or ethics to do that. So anyway, I think it would be a good time to review, since unfortunately that's going to be very costly to the city of Pismo, and... more lawyers and the county, since the DA is involved. And then the other thing I'd like to put on the...
Vice President, is it okay if we wait for either a second or...
Okay, sorry.
So that's to place a presentation about the requirements of the Brown Act, in particular in light of the
right.
DA's letter to the city of Pismo
right.
Beach.
Closed session.
Regarding closed session.
Yeah. Okay, and then secondly, I would like to put on the agenda maybe the nuts and bolts, future agenda nuts and bolts of OPAR, so that we have all of that information ahead of time before they come to the board and want to spend money. So I think it's a question of being timely and, time for us to discuss and understand.
If I may, Vice President Gibson,
sure.
I think that fortunately the nuts and bolts will be brought by... So as I understand mm-hmm. it, and I was going to chime in earlier, so just mm-hmm. to formalize item 8A, the decision, what the board will do is bring this back to a regular meeting after the committee has had a chance to review and provide additional feedback regarding the draft of the resolution and committee bylaws that are in today's meeting packet.
Okay.
So that will be that will certainly be brought back to the board.
Okay, good.
Okay, I'd like to put on the agenda a closed session item, since we're going to be meeting anyway. And I'd like to review the topics, contents of the decisions and the selections for closed session meeting in 2022.
I didn't quite understand that.
So is this you're talking about at the September 21st meeting?
Yeah.
So, Director Joyce Tennyson, just to restate what you'd like to place on the agenda for closed session on September 21st is a
review of one of the topics that occurred during 2022.
Before you were on the board?
Yeah.
A review of closed session of closed session deliberations from 2022.
Yes.
If the motion can also just if it's okay, if there's a second, I'd just like to work with you just to make sure that the wording is correct to
okay.
what's required for the Brown Act.
Yeah, let's yes. talk about it.
Yes. But you would need a second for that item.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay. We don't need public comment, right?
And I have another item that I want to put on that closed session, and this is a performance review of legal counsel with potential for contract modifications. I'm not sure what that, there's a certain language that has to be put in there.
Nope.
No.
Not yet.
For the September 21st.
So this has been proposed for a closed session on the September 21st meeting.
Can you repeat that?
It's a performance review of legal counsel with the possibility of modifying the contract.
But no.
Okay, so we had a motion and a second. Did we?
Yeah, I second that.
Okay. Okay, any other agenda items? Okay, moving on. Any future hearing items?
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
Okay, back to future agenda.
We have a September 27th meeting, so we need to do agenda items for that as well.
Council District, we're going to be putting that agenda on the 27th?
No, not a special meeting.
Why would the review of the district, why would that have to be on a special meeting? If you want to review the district council's contract, why could that be in a closed session on the 27th?
Is there a problem with it being on the 27th?
Well, I won't be here. I'm just... That's...
This is time sensitive. I think it's important that we get to it on the 21st. So on the 27th, in open session, I'd like a item under new business on board decision-making processes. That would be the general title. This refers to, in general, these are topics that I have raised and other directors have raised. Like, there is the, this could be a simple example of the process we use for documenting that directors are here so that Carrie can get reimbursements. We have examples from other areas that make this very, very simple. Topic of institutionalizing first and second readings of major board business. I'd like to talk about some of the bylaws that talk about communication between general manager and directors. So board decision-making processes. Make a motion that we put that on.
Including canceling of meetings?
Oh, yes, okay, canceling of meetings. I think that appears to be resolved.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a second?
Oh, yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, first and a second. Okay, moving on, future hearing items.
I got another agenda item. This is simply, and I don't know if we need to put it on there, but this would be that we have the Parks and Recreation resolution and bylaws continued to the next meeting. Just want to make sure it's there. I guess that would be under old business.
That will be before you meet with your Parks and Recreation
committee. Oh, yeah.
So.
Thank you. So we won't do that. Unless we want to have any discussion on it, it should be there, and then we can always skip it. I'd rather err on that side. If you don't mind, I may be able to work through at least an initial revision of some of this and talking with the leadership of Oak Park. So that's why I would say have it on there. Maybe we won't utilize it, but it'd be better to have it. Share and not share.
going to be a long meeting. Okay, any other future agenda items? Oh, I'm sorry. Second?
Yeah, I second that.
This last closed session one is, I think the title is just possible litigation. And this is would be a review of relevant documents and a status report on potential areas of litigation for the district.
So, Director Varney, we would have to consult with you on what the specifics of that are. That I suppose if there's a second, it can be placed, but we would just have to make sure that we understand the specifics so that the correct verbiage, both on the agenda and with the agenda packet, are included.
We can talk after the meeting.
Certainly.
Yeah, I'll second that.
And just for the record, I'll work with you, Director Varney, to confirm whether that can be held, discussed in closed session or if it needs to be an open session.
Okay, we'll close future agenda items. And do we have any future hearing items? No, we don't. Any report on closed session? No, we don't. And make a motion to adjourn someone? A second?
I'll second that.
Okay, we're done.
Oh, may I get a roll call? Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yes. Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
Director Varney?
Yeah.
And Vice President Gibson?
Yes. I was in a hurry.